In her first book of nonfiction, The Lives of the Muses, critic and novelist Francine Prose examines the fate of 9 women who throughout modern history inspired famous artists. But critic Maureen Corrigan says musedom sometimes sounds exciting here, but she's glad that feminism opened up other career options for artistically inclined women.
Francine Prose's new book, The Lives of the Muses, is almost too much fun to read. After all, a book that deliciously dwells on Dr. Samuel Johnson's bondage fantasies, the Pre-Raphaelite artist Dante Gabriel Rossetti's necrophilia, and Salvador Dali's fondness for decorating himself with human excrement, comes dangerously close to sounding like an extended version of one of those dish-the-dirt biographical exposés in Vanity Fair. But Francine Prose is no mere high-toned gossip monger. An insightful and inventive critic, as well as an entertaining one, Prose takes her historical exploration of the role of muse seriously. If a little mud gets slung, well, it's all in the name of scholarship. Because the career of muse, especially after the advent of feminism, has fallen into disrepute, Prose recognizes that she's got to first convince her contemporary readers of the potential dignity and power of that role. So she tells us a fascinating opening anecdote. In the spring of 1932, Columbia University invited an 80-year-old English woman to New York in order to confer an honorary doctorate upon her. The elderly woman was Alice Pleasance Liddell Hargreaves, the originating cause of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. Alice's honorary doctorate in musedom, Prose says, is very possibly the only one in academic history. The flair for the dramatic that Prose displays in telling this story extends to her rollicking discussions of the lives and work of other muses. There's Hester Thrale, the great lady who entertained Dr. Johnson as her houseguest for 16 years, and who, after his death, published anecdotes and a volume of his letters to her. Consequently, Prose says that Thrale was the first muse to discover that a decent living could be made, a more or less respectable literary reputation earned, by mining her relationship with her artist. There are victim muses, like Lizzie Siddle, the copper-haired working-class model for so many of Rossetti's paintings, whose suicide by overdose of laudanum was provoked by Rossetti's flagrant infidelities. After Lizzie's death, the shameless Rossetti took up spiritualism, summoning up the ghostly Lizzie to rap on tables and give her opinion of his current paintings. Also flitting around in this broad category is Caris Weston, photographer Edward Weston's model, who, like Lizzie, degenerated into an art wife, exchanging her lyre and flute, Prose says, for the diaper and dish rag. Prose christens Lou Andreas Salome a serial muse because she inspired, in turn, Nietzsche, Rilke, and Freud, who himself paid homage to Andreas Salome by calling her the great understander. The possibility of collaborative musedom is suggested by the odd symbiotic partnership of George Balanchine and Suzanne Farrell. And then there are those muses who are determined to play second fiddle to no man. Gala Dali is in this group. So is Yoko Ono, the most reviled muse of our time. Prose acknowledges that Yoko's harsh reception as an artist in her own right owed much to race and gender prejudice. Yet she refuses to second John Lennon's estimation of Yoko as a genius. The insistence on being noticed, Prose shrewdly observes, makes so much of her art seem more coy than profound. The Lives of the Muses doesn't offer startlingly new biographical information on these women and their artists. Instead, its strength lies in Prose's skill as a gifted synthesizer and interpreter of familiar facts. As such, she stretches her readers' appreciation of the different forms of heterosexual love, which certainly manifests itself in all shapes, sizes, and neurotic variations throughout these life stories. Reflecting on the glaring absence here of male muses, Prose says that female artists seem less inclined to idealize their male companions. In lieu of muses, they're more often given male psychiatric nurses, like Leonard Woolf. Of course, men historically have been less willing to act as passive enablers of women's art, the traditional muse's role that Prose questions throughout her book. Being a muse, she suggests, may oftentimes be a dirty, thankless job, but somebody's got to do it. Or do they?
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed The Lives of the Muses by Francine Prose.